Before the news quiz, here's Jonathan Dimbleby.
In Any Questions Today, the meaning of the Lib Dem victory in Dunfermline. And with the Energy Minister Malcolm Wicks, alongside the Iranian specialist Ali Ansari, the Lib Dem multimillionaire Paul Marshall, and Anne Leslie, nuclear energy versus renewables. Is there a choice? Then political philosophy. Which philosopher was the greatest influence on the four of them? And inevitably again this week, should freedom of speech include the freedom to offend? That's Any Questions, followed by Any Answers, all starting straight after the news at 1 o'clock.
And to have your say, the Any Answers number is 08700 100444. The lines are just opening. And now we begin a new series of an old favourite.
We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with an offering from the Eastern Daily Press, read by Harriet Cass.
Escape for a romantic break with that special someone on our Mystery Valentine's weekend. Don't only say it with flowers this Valentine's Day. Surprise your partner with a planned weekend away for just the two of you. NB, single person supplement, £15.
Oh, thanks to Peter Threadkell for sending that in. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Alexi Sale. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. And Francis, once again, the traditional easy question goes to the first panellist. What's been drawing criticism from around the globe?
Thanks a lot. I get a question that entitles me to a fatwa. It's very sweet of you. But it's about the cartoons, isn't it? There's been a terrible kerfuffle and mobs of people are rampaging around the world, burning down Danish embassies and boycotting Danish goods. I didn't really understand this because I thought beer and bacon were the main exports. And I shouldn't have thought much call for that in the Islamic world. But I don't know, there must be other things. Lurpak, probably. Is that Danish? We're doing our bit on the news quiz by boycotting Sandy Toksvig for a whole week. I saw Sandy this week. I had lunch with her yesterday, and she's very perky. Her phone hasn't stopped ringing, because all over the country, radio stations, newsrooms, TV stations, think, we must get a Dane on. Now, who do we know who's Danish? And they look in their Rolodex, and there is only one famous Danish person. And actually, Sandy said to me a while ago, she was watching daytime television quiz shows, as she does, and there was some question about famous Danish entertainers, and there were a few clues given, and she got the first two. It was Hans Christian Andersen and Victor Borger, and the third one, she was puzzling. She thought, I'm sure this sounds familiar, I can't think who it is. And then the answer came up, and the answer was Sandy Toksvig. But that's what it is, isn't it? They've taken offence at the cartoons, and actually the British press, I think, has been a bit feeble about it, because they've all run rather pompous editorials saying, we shall not be reprinting these cartoons, because we don't think they're very funny. Implying that they would have done if they were funny.
Do you think then that would have changed the attitude maybe of Abu Hamza? He'd say, well, it's an offensive cartoon, but it's a belter. I feel, to be honest, I'm going to say what I like because they can't behead me. I haven't got a neck. Let's look at the positive. I thought the positive aspect that emerged was that clearly sort of moderate Muslim opinion got a bit mobilised to influence that bloke, Omar Khayyam, who marched dressed as a suicide bomber, and he apologised. And it's not an easy apology to make, is it? Because there isn't a card for it. You can't pop into Clinton's and get, I'm sorry I dressed as a suicide bomber and call for you to be beheaded card. Let's not pussyfoot around. The Bible and the Quran have got a lot of rubbish in them, haven't they? There is a lot of stuff in it that is medieval rubbish that worked very well in the days when there was tribal warfare in the desert. But, you know, all this stuff about foods that are unclean. We've got fridges now. You know, and there's a lot of stuff. So, and a lot of the laws are pretty medieval in both Judaism and Islam. And what I resent, I think, is those sort of radical hardliners in Iran and Iraq and places feeling that in some way Islamic law applies in countries that aren't Islamic. I don't see. I mean, how would they feel if they woke up, all the people in Tehran woke up and Lambeth Council had wheel clamped their cars?
Actually, Andy, because you're saying that the Bible is useless, but in fact, if you look in the New Testament, there is St. Paul's letter to national car parks.
The decision by a Danish newspaper to publish cartoons depicting Mohammed as a suicide bomber sparked protests and riots across the globe. In London, there was a dangerous irony shortage as a handful of Muslim extremists took umbrage at being portrayed as murderous suicide bombers by parading through the streets dressed as suicide bombers and calling for the beheading of people who portrayed them as murderous suicide bombers. 2 points to Francis. Alexei, welcome back to the news quiz.
Thank you.
Who's had to think again about education?
Can't I have the Mohammed question again? It's more comic mileage. Well, I don't mind.
Sure. You wouldn't want to incur the wrath of Ruth Kelly, would you? Now, that's a serious threat.
It's about the Education Act or something like that. And it's like, you know, because they want to keep, like, comprehensive education on it. Like, it didn't, like, you know what I mean? Do me no harm, you know, that I'm, like, quite speechifying-ish. Me speak and it good comprehensives.
2 points.
Labour Party life.
Going back to the Ruth Kelly thing for a moment, I saw the most unfair headline I think I've seen in years in the Times. It had a picture of her being splatted by this bloke from Fathers for Attention or whatever he was. And the headline was, Ruth Kelly fails to avoid egg. That was it. She hadn't even had the foresight to get out the way of the egg.
Which shows how unbelievable those Fathers for Justice are. They actually managed to get people feeling sorry for Ruth Kelly. Really, indeed.
Mm. I feel quite sorry for her. I mean, I think education's a terrible brief to be given at the moment, because Blair has obviously got all these ideas about turning the schools into beacons of excellence and everything. I mean, to be honest, I don't think, you know, if you're sending your kid to a school, you don't want it to be a beacon of excellence. You don't want it to be 100% excellent. You want the school to be like life. You want the teachers to be 80% rubbish. And 5% good, and 15%, well, you can take them or leave them. And you know, education is what Northern Ireland used to be. It's the job you give the minister you don't like.
Well, she actually wanted it. She forced Blair to keep her at education, if you remember. He wanted to make her health secretary.
That's because she's in Opus Dei, so she has to mortify herself, doesn't she? So she has to give herself a terrible time. In fact, she probably paid that bloke to smash the egg. And her head, he's probably a Jesuit priest.
Faced with the prospect of up to 90 MPs rebelling, the government this week offered to compromise on its controversial education reforms. Tony Blair told the Commons Committee, "We do know what works. You can see the schools that are the ones that are pushing ahead." Well, you can if you get a really big telescope and point it at France. Andy, who wants to take the majesty out of government?
Oh, this is David Cameron, who's turning into a personality. A bit. He wants to take away the royal prerogative. I didn't know the royals still had a prerogative. But apparently they can still declare war. It worried me. I thought, if Prince Philip reads this, we are in so much trouble.
Well, she doesn't really exist in any constitutional sense at all. It's the Bush prerogative that actually takes us into war. It's got nothing to do with the Queen. She doesn't make those decisions. No. The only interesting thing about the Queen this week I discovered, because I'm coming close to it, is you have to have a new driving test when you're 75, except the Queen. She is the only person in the country who drives who doesn't have a driving licence. She has no driving licence. She can do 90 miles an hour in a built-up area without having to claim she was just testing this new car that had been delivered to her. She can park on treble yellow lines. She can go up the north face of the Eiger in a Ferrari. And you cannot do anything. She has no driving licence. She's 104 years old. She can drive any speed she likes. It is terrific to be
queen. And also she doesn't have to have number plates on her cars.
And nobody knows it's hers. Well, you see his little face and the headscarf behind it.
But anyway, because if she got done for some sort of traffic offence, the case would be the Queen versus the Queen, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Conservative leader David Cameron has established a democracy task force to examine the Prime Minister's use of the royal prerogative. The task force will be headed by Ken Clark, who's also Shadow Minister for Hush Puppies, Cigars, Jazz, and never going to be Prime Minister. 2 points to Andy. Alan, listen to this. I Alan, who hopes their latest overhaul will stop fathers getting away with it.
This is the CSA.
It is.
Which has spent several hundred billion, probably, of our money in failing to distribute that money to people who deserve it, for bringing up children who have been deserted, and now it's going to have a makeover. Several options, initiatives and think tanks, and I think they're going to spend 30 billion in changing it from CSA to CAS. And then they'll think about policy. But the CSA is a complete waste of time. I mean, all it ends up in is blokes in Batman outfits crawling up Buckingham Palace while the Queen roars around in a Ferrari and downstairs, and Philip takes pot shots at him from the window. So nothing has happened. The CSA is not even self-supporting. It has spent more money on not giving the money it ought to have given people than actually giving the money to anybody. And their children have suffered. It's a ghastly operation.
Maybe the answer is an agency of firm grannies. Sit both parties down and, you know, just sort it out.
Yes. Well, food for thought there. Before the results of the last review have even been published, Work and Pension Secretary John Hutton has announced another review into every aspect of the failing CSA, the Child Support Agency. Absent fathers currently owe the CSA £3.3 billion, enough to buy the entire Barbie set for at least four children. At the end of round one, everybody has 4 points. And we start round two with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph.
A bank yesterday apologised profusely for sending out hundreds of leaflets on chip and pin services with a wrong phone number that led directly to a sex line. A spokesman for the Royal Bank of Scotland said it was aware of only two complaints.
Oh, thanks to the many people who spotted that. Francis, why this week are hospitals dangerous places to get better?
Well, it's obviously the health service. The hospitals are unclean. It's a MRSA or CPSA or whatever it's called. IKEA, is that what they call it? that thing that people get from unclean hospitals.
It doesn't have actually anything to do with muck on the floors, though. It's about people coming in who've already got it and infect an entire ward. And they go away again. It's simply because they've been leaning on a wall somewhere where MRSA is endemic. And they've gone into the hospital to visit a loved one, who they hope was recovering from an ingrowing toenail, and the loved one is dead by 4 o'clock, taking hundreds of other people with him.
It's not really news, is it, that there's illness in hospitals and there are germs and things in hospitals? I think we took that for granted long ago.
But they weren't set up to manufacture it.
But this week, the government announced that teams of experts will target hospitals failing to halt a dramatic rise in the superbug MRSA. Superbugs are very similar to ordinary bugs, except they don't get out of their hospital bed for less than £10,000. 2 points to Francis. Alexei, why are ministers convinced we'll be drawing breath long after we've drawn a pension?
Is this the thing, the story about how we're all going to live to be over 100 by 2075, which is always what I've always dreaded happening, is that they will invent an anti-death pill, you know, about a year after I cark it. And also, I think one of the things that always worried me about living longer is that, you know, like, we never discovered really Alzheimer's until people lived long enough to get it. I think, you know, if people start living into their hundreds and hundreds, we'll find lots of new illnesses, like Atkinson's syndrome, where, you know, your head gets filled with
that's exactly it.
Yes. I am 167. I don't know, your head gets filled with exploding chickens or something like that. I don't know.
But there are going to be more than a million centenarians, I think, aren't there, by the year 2070-something.
Yeah, there'll be no room on the pavement because of all them. I think a lot of them people who've got them electric scooters aren't disabled at all, I think. I think people just... Is there any kind of rule about getting one of them? Do you have to...
I think the Queen's allowed to drive one.
She's going to be kept busy if she's still around in the year 2070.
Oh, well, they'll have to move it. It'll have to be, you get a telegram when you're 160.
Actually, they don't have telegrams anymore, do they? She probably sends some text messages.
Shout through the letterbox and then she's off on the motorbike at 200 miles an hour. Happy birthday!
It's going to be murder for young people, isn't it? I mean, in a world full of 100-year, they're going to be working their arse off just to support us. How funny is that going to be?
The government's population projection study estimates that by 2074 there could be 1.2 million people over the age of 100 in Britain. The news of a population explosion sent the stock market into a frenzy, as for the first time in their lives, traders shouted, "Buy Werther's Originals!" It's also been announced that over 75s could soon be required to complete a paper-based test every 5 years to renew their driving licence. Studies have shown that the elderly have slower reaction times and are much more likely to be baffled by road signs, such as, "Welcome to Liverpool, European capital of culture." Andy, why will the Church of England no longer be a slave to its past?
Well, this is another card you can't buy in Clinton's. "We're sorry we participated in the slave trade" card. The Church of England, the synod has decided that they needed to apologise because there was a plantation in Barbados owned by the Church of England that employed many thousands, I think, of slaves. And the Archbishops of Canterbury and York especially felt that it was important that the Church apologise for this. And at one level you think, yeah, that's a symbolic apology, but I'm not quite sure about apologising for something that other people did. If institutions start to apologise, I mean, maybe the royal family, are they going to be asked to apologise? I'd love to be there when they explain to Prince Philip that he has to say sorry for Culloden. I mean, where does it stop? I know we've been trying for years to get Japan to acknowledge that there was a war, but I'm not quite convinced that it makes sense, I suppose, to start apologising for events that far back in history.
It's a bit like as if we had to apologise for the time Edwina Curry was on the news quiz.
Yeah, no, I don't think that could be covered by an apology. She was the only person I've ever known on this show get booed in the warm-up.
As part of its planned commemoration of its role in the abolition of slavery in 1807, the Church of England General Synod has issued an apology for its complicity in sustaining slavery throughout the 1700s. As well as apologising for that, the Church also asked for 9 crusades, hundreds of witch burnings, and every episode of Songs of Praise to be taken into consideration. Alan, who's been fighting for their right, left, and mainly centre to lead the party?
It's about the Liberals. I didn't do answers about Liberals. I don't know, there aren't many Liberals left. I mean, the entire Liberal Party is, even as I speak, crossing Clapham Common in certain something to do instead of leading the Liberal Party. I mean, I don't think they take politics terribly seriously. They're either drunks or profligate in every possible way. It's a long time. I remember Joe Grimmon. He was the last one who was any good. Joe Grimmon wore a 3-piece suit, had grey hair, and looked after his wife. But they're currently engaged with this person called Ming. I don't know, the Ming dynasty, the 14,000-year-old Scotsman who is standing for... He wants to lead these three people. to the promised land. And he's got a reconstructed bloke, Simon Hughes, who I thought analysed the cricket wonderfully on Channel 4. I don't know why I ever changed jobs. And there's a one called Hen. Or if you're German, it will be Hen. How will the Germans ever take him seriously?
Isn't he a fake one, though? Like,
a fake
he's
Hen.
A fake one, like in Big Brother. They thought, we'll throw a fake one in, see if they spot him.
And there isn't anything else. There's a man called Lembit Oatpick, the shadow spokesman for Scrabble, probably. But he's married to that... He's married to that weather woman with the rubber mouth. I've forgotten her name, but she's Welsh. They're very... It's just a very strange galère of people. I mean, I might even vote for them out of facetiousness. It's the only reason you do it.
You can actually buy T-shirts from some Lib Dem website now if you support Campbell, and they say, "I'm a Minger."
In a remarkable result for the Liberal Democrats, a whole week has managed to go by without any of their leadership candidates having to resign. So at the end of round two, everyone has still 8 points. And before we start round three, here's a listing from the Radio Times.
8 o'clock, Christine's Garden, new series. It's early summer, and horticulturalist Christine Walkden introduces us to her small but perfectly formed garden. She also comes to the aid of her 72-year-old neighbour, Reg, who's having trouble with his plums.
Oh, thanks to Michael Fife for sending that in. Francis, why has a sweet left a bitter aftertaste?
Why has a sweet?
I only had one question.
We don't
you
know.
Had a question about going to turning 100.
I've forgotten.
Never mind.
did I? Who are you, young man? You hippie.
It is not the Snickers bar.
It is the Snickers bar.
Yeah, it's Anthony Worrell Thompson.
That dreadful hairy dwarf has invented a... He's done one better than the deep fried...
I happen to think he's rather good looking.
Yes, he's extremely handsome, follically endowed ginger person.
I really like his voice. I think he's got something about it.
Anyway, he has created a thing called Snicker Bar Pie, and every slice is 14,000 calories, and it's very bad.
You see, there's that advert where Gary Rhodes, Ainsley Harriott, and Sir Walter, they're all having dinner together.
It's all about washing up.
Yeah, and they call him like Ains and that.
Yeah, I know.
Do you think they do know each other? Because everybody thinks that comedians live in a big house together.
I know three blokes with a palm full of fairy liquid, and I think Liberal Democrats.
The Snickers pie, devised by Anthony Worrell Thompson, has been denounced as unhealthy. Every serving of the Snickers pie has the equivalent of 22 teaspoons of fat and 11 of sugar. It's thought to be the most dangerous heavyweight pudding since John Prescott. Alexei, how have patients in the Northeast been making their doctors feel decidedly coggly?
They've issued a dictionary for doctors in the Northeast because people use dialect words and... So people say, you know, I'm having a right problem with me stumpy. And the doctor says, what? Me stumpy. You know, me stumpy. Am I right? I'm having, it's, I'm having, like, fununky with it. You know, me stumpy is fununky. Years ago, I worked on the Jubilee, you know, the Jubilee line. If you go south from Green Park, I dug about the first 4 feet of the Jubilee line.
Before I always get stuck.
Yeah. It does narrow a bit there, yeah. I couldn't be bothered, you know. But all the workmen, they were Irish, they used to give all the tools different names. My boss one day, this kind of pit prop or something fell down, he picked it up, he said, quick, quick, hand me the shamrock. And I'm going, what this? He's going, no, not that, the shamrock. And I'm holding up, like, you know, sticks and knives and hammers and crowbars. No, the shamrock! And finally it fell down and crushed him.
But I think the Geordies are making them up, because intestines, supposedly in Geordie slang, are trolley bags. How does that work? I know they're hard, but do they eat trolleys? What, I mean, there's a supermarket trolley, I'll have that for my breakfast.
Easington Primary Care Trust in County Durham is preparing a medical dictionary for doctors who can't understand their patients' dialect. Doctors that hail from the Northeast already use a number of Geordie phrases at work, such as, you've fallen rang for you're pregnant, canny for you're fine, and Sunderland might win on Saturday for I'm sorry, there is no hope. Andy, what have scientists finally managed to shed light on?
I don't know. Have you seen this, Anna? I've called Atkinson syndrome. I'm a
head full of chicken.
Yeah.
It's about light, is it?
Or absence thereof.
Oh, is it to do with dark matter?
Correct,
in the universe?
2 points.
Yeah, you're going to ask me what they found out now, aren't you?
No, I'm not going to bother.
They found it. Well, dark matter, this always strikes me as one of those things where if I was a scientist, I think I would want to specialise in something that is very hard to prove. And there are cosmologists who are specialists in the study of dark matter, which is what the universe is mostly made up of, except that we can't see it and we can't find it. So it's basically Paul Daniels with a degree. It's just, but they've explained dark matter, have they?
Sort of thing, yes.
One of the great mysteries of the universe. I want to know now, what have they found out about dark matter?
Dark matter particles are invisible and radiate no warmth and are thought to be the main constituency of Alistair Campbell.
That's not scientific at all, is it?
Andy, by studying the motion of dwarf galaxies orbiting the Milky Way, astronomers have, for the first time, been able to describe some of the physical properties of dark matter.
I knew that. I just momentarily forgot it.
And dwarf galaxies are identical to ordinary galaxies.
They don't like being called dwarf galaxies. No, they really don't.
Electrically challenged.
Galaxies of restricted height, they're not even sure about that.
Jolly good. 2 points. Alan, where was paradise regained this week?
This is in Papua New Guinea, and it's a sort of lost world thing. These botanists have sort of gone through a green garden door into Papua New Guinea and all sorts of other species, and they're afraid of no human being at all, except cartoonists. But they have found all sorts of butterflies, and there's a very particularly interesting frog.
And a tree kangaroo, which I thought, does that do any hopping, a tree kangaroo? Because I know why it's extinct, if it does.
You sort of wonder how it evolved, wouldn't you? Now, if you were a kangaroo, you'd learn to jump, and you say there's a tree, boing, and you...
It's a kangaroo that can't get down, that's what it is.
An expedition to the pristine rainforest of the Foja mountain range in New Guinea has revealed what scientists have called a new Garden of Eden, filled with rare and previously undiscovered plants and wildlife. I can see no evidence whatever of human impact or presence here, Dr. Beeler told reporters at a press conference in Lowestoft. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from The Times. It's an article about a naming and shaming policy for curb crawlers. Prostitutes also worked on the Newport estate near the town centre. Edna Donnelly, 54, head of the estate's residents' association, said, "I lived side by side with these women. I wasn't happy about it, but they were adults and we rubbed along."
Alexei.
This is from Mr. Lennox and it's from the Peak Times of Matlock. Lady 48, smoker, seeks an attractive male, 40 to 55, for friendship, possible relationship. Enjoys wind and dining.
Andy.
This is from Louis Osborne, from County Wicklow in Ireland, and it's the terms and conditions of a booking on a holiday, and it says, "In addition, we are now providing refunds for natural disasters. If a natural disaster occurs and your cancellation notice has expired, we will provide a refund of 75% of the booking or reschedule your booking, depending on customer preference. Natural disasters are limited to tsunamis, earthquakes, volcanoes, comet strikes, and the end of the world." And what I love is, "and the end of the world" is in bold.
Alan.
It's the East Anglian Daily Times. So the prosecution, Mr. Alan Dutton, told Lexton and Winstree Magistrates Court that after Plunkett, 25, rowed with his wife, he broke down the door of the reptile house at Colchester Zoo to talk things over with his favourite snake.
Thank you all. And now let's look at the final score. Francis and Lexi have 14, but Alan and Andy just in the lead with 18 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Oxford Times sent in by Henry Spielberg.
Tony McGeorge, prosecuting, said he was found to have 6 20-gram deals of a drug he said was heroin for his own personal use, hidden between the cheeks of his bottom. The drug was found to be crack cocaine.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Green, Alexis Sale, Andy Hamilton and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Simon Littlefield and Roderick Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.
And next week, Simon Hoggart will be joined by Jeremy Hardy, Phil Jupitus, Fred McCauley and Alan Corrin. Joining us now for the lunchtime weather forecast is Nina Ridge.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. The weather is going to turn much more unsettled. We'll see some cloud and also some rain developing over the next couple of days. We've certainly got more cloud around today with some rain in the northwest, but I'll start the forecast in more detail for England and also Wales. A lot of places are going to remain dry for this afternoon. We will perhaps see a few sunny spells developing as well. For northwest England, it's going to be a cloudier afternoon with a few spots of rain, and that rain could be fairly heavy from time to time for Cumbria. A top temperature of around 6 or 7 degrees. Overnight tonight for England and Wales, things start off mainly dry, but they will become fairly wet during the early hours, and we'll see some fairly heavy rain developing through northwest England, the North Midlands, North Wales, South East England and also East Anglia, lows of around 3 or 4 degrees. Now moving on to Scotland, where again we're going to have quite a cloudy afternoon. The rain will always be heaviest for western Scotland, and we will see some snow over the hills. It'll also be quite windy in western Scotland, and temperatures, however, not too bad in Stornoway, around 8 degrees.